Welcome to Talentless, the podcast that's all HR, all talent, and zero fluff. Hosted by industry talent leaders, Desiree Goldie and Ashley King, and made for recruiters who think of talent outside of the box. They're here to dig into the heart of what makes workplaces tick and sometimes blow up. They are not afraid to get into the messy, the meaningful, and the downright motivating. So buckle up, because they're here to make you the best in the business. Now, let's get to work.
Ashley, you know, this is one of my favorite topics, talking about merit mythbusters and getting really into it about why merit, it shouldn't be the answer. Are you excited for this one?
Oh, I'm so excited for this one. I'm literally biting my tongue so you can tell everyone else what we're about to hop into, because it's great.
Yes, I said we want our listeners to understand that EEOC compliant hiring practices have always insisted on a merit and experience-based hiring and promotion system. It is utilized as evidence for decision-making. Talk about why merit isn't the corporate savior people think it is right now. So First, let's get into it a little bit, because I'm excited. What is merit in your definition, Ashley?
So most of the time whenever I ask people what is merit, they often just say it's work. It's who has done the most of this type of skill in labor and who has the most work under their belt, and they have the most merit, right? Like, that's kind of this idea, is that it is experience and skill combined that create merit.
I agree. Definitely. I was talking to someone over the weekend. And I said, it's the work really hard, you get a trophy thing in theory. And, you know, we've changed that over time. I think it still applies here, is that you work really, really hard. You get to be number one, right? Or you get that job, or you get that thing. And merit sounds super objective, but in reality, it's not.
Correct.
If you're looking through my lens to your lens, what does merit mean? And I think there's some huge gaps in how merit works. But I really want to get into the deep, deep end of this subject, because I think this is where we want to get to the crux of. You know, I want to the listeners to understand what is the difference between merit and DEI, and kind of what the controversy really is.
Yeah. Right. Great question. So just to set the record straight, whenever we're talking about merit, I know we just defined it, but for most people who have worked in HR and talent, there has never been a time, for the most part, that we have ever been able to hire not on a system of merit. Meaning the odds of us being able to hire someone with absolutely zero relevant experience, that's usually something of an intern, right? Like, we don't get to just hire for qualified professional roles just anyone who qualifies. So I think that that's the first thing we need to establish, because people think that not having merit or having something else such as DEI means that they're no longer using a work experience filter to assess candidates and talent. And that's just not the case.
Absolutely. We talk about this all the time, though. It's like the idea that we are suddenly out here hiring unqualified humans to fill roles and still being in a capitalistic society is absolutely ridiculous, right? You need people to fill roles, to make KPIs, to get profits and do all of those things. So why would you put an unqualified person in the seat? It's the most ludicrous argument.
Yeah, ever. I don't know very many managers that want to do that either. Like, I don't know a manager who's just like, you know what, I'll train them from the ground up. Give me a newbie. I would love to use all my time for that. never heard it. And so whenever we're talking about merit, the interesting concept of merit is the fact that right now it is kind of being weaponized and utilized to be this band-aid for now, the DEI removal, right? Like, we won't do DEI, we'll do merit, quote unquote. And that's what it always should have been. So first, I want to reconnect this disconnect that stopped happening because of DEI. That's not the truth. If anything, I feel like we had to provide more data points to illustrate how qualified individuals were from marginalized communities.
Absolutely.
And so I think something that's really important to differentiate between merit and DEI are exactly what the differences are. So within the DEI structure, we focus on education. educating the hiring managers about their biases, educating peer interviewers on how to be objective and how to have good candidate assessment that can be consistent, reliable, and valid. Merit does not have any construct in it to be able to illustrate that to any professionals. There is no catch-all. There is no how do we ensure that everyone is aware of what biases could impact their decision-making process. And there isn't a catch-all for that in Merit. So Merit is kind of, we want to leave people up to their own devices of bias, and we want them to just look at quantified experience, which we know very, very well is somewhat of a fallacy of an assessment whenever we're looking at merit.
Yeah. You know, I always question this thing about training and, you know, not saying that we did it right in the DEI movement since 2020, but I always am super concerned when people say they don't want to be trained to make better decisions as a hiring manager. Because this also goes back to something I always talk about, right? That bad leadership. You know, we're not training someone to make better decisions. If you are an assessor sitting in the seat and you didn't want to be trained about not to have a bias for any reason, right? The color of your clothes, the color of your hair, things in your face. If you didn't want to be trained to do better in that situation, I don't know what you're doing as a leader in the space. And so this wraps back right back around to, you know, merit and DEI and all these crazy, but why do you not want to be trained to do better in your role? And it's, I struggle with it so much when we talk about this conversation, because when people give me the opposite argument, you know, of course I give them that it's not a level playing field. It's not all, you know, all of the reasons we talk about DEI, but I just don't understand the logic around not wanting to be better at my job.
I honestly can agree. I think that whenever, whether you're an HR or a hiring manager, your job is people. For the most part, because you're hiring people, you're managing people. And what kind of person who is over people doesn't want to understand people? I've never wanted to work with a computer that no one gave me directions or any input. Like, I would be very over it. I would throw it away.
Throw it in the trash.
Exactly. Straight to the garbage. And so whenever we think about things like that, and we think about this profession as a whole, whenever now we've dissolved people management skills and training, and we've dissolved this, I don't want to say fail safe because no one was safe and it did fail, but this kind of, again, this like little net that says, okay, if everybody else is terrible at this, at least we have this net of education to where we can bring people up, we can teach them, we can get them to apply these methods and to mitigate as much biases as possible. All of that is gone. And that's kind of what merit does. Whenever you start looking at what the real difference is between merit and DEI, because again, merit was always there still. We have always evaluated and assessed candidates based off of experience. The main difference is now we don't have an emphasis on mitigating biases. Now we don't have a way to understand our historical context, our macro systems within HR. We no longer have a way of connecting why we have certain laws into what the origin stories of those were, so we can avoid those going in the future. There's now a disconnect that says actually none of that matters. What matters is just looking at the resume. So we've really gone backwards about 10 steps.
Oh, so many steps, many steps. And I even think that, and I'm probably one of the more critical ones on how DEI was being done in organizations, but yes. I will even go back to say that we weren't even teaching historical context
correct
enough for people to understand where this came from, why it started, how we got here, and why this is a better solution, right? We've never walked that completely through because so much of DEI was put a butt in the seat that filled a quota. That was on the organizations. And I don't think most DEI practitioners would ever say that was their goal, was just to put somebody in the seat, but it's what they got given, right? And what they had to work with. Mm-hmm. And so we walk through a lot of, you know, non-education of people and just kind of throwing training at them. So now we're back to this merit conversation. It really does nothing for people in the space, for leading people through to real roles, to leveling the playing field, talking about equity, talking about all these things. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that of everything, this is a rhetoric, fear-based mongering approach. It is 100%. If you ask someone, well, I haven't gotten a job because of DEI, they hired someone else. Dig into that story with them. Ask them how they know who got hired. Ask them what skill set the other person had that they didn't, that like just get in there, because what you're going to find is that this is just a mental insecurity blanket is what it is. It's them saying, how could I possibly not have gotten this job? The only way someone ever could have gotten a job over me is if they had assistance or unearned advantages, such as a DEI program that would emphasize them, because it's not possible that a woman could possibly be smarter than me.
Yes.
And so it's an interesting dynamic. That driven fear is what has created this current environment that we're in, and this current landscape, because we're relying on things now that aren't data-based, and we're retracting different methods and mechanisms that we've been putting in place structurally to ensure that we can mitigate these different things. The interesting thing to me is the timing of merit, because in 2024, I would say that DEI was going through a realignment. It was going through a reconciliation to where, because you're exactly right, come 2020, it was a mess. It was a messy mess. But we were making a turn where people who were never supposed to be in this space were finally dropping out. Companies that never had genuine and or good intent and were just creating human collateral have folded. So now we were really starting to, you know, work with real contenders and with real HR teams that really wanted to do this work. Merit has kind of somewhat put a stop to that, because like you mentioned, they weren't teaching historical context. That's because they were just catching up to what was happening, especially if you weren't a qualified practitioner in this space. You have so much to learn. Okay, so whenever we're talking about merit, there are kind of three aspects that I want to ensure our listeners really walk away with and understanding and comprehending whenever they're hearing about merit in these times. This is why, and this is kind of the origin story of where it starts.
You know, I love a good origin story.
Don't you?
So I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. Well, and we'll kind of keep it a little short and sweet. Essentially, the term merit, and I don't think anyone's surprised by this, is a dog whistle term as far as it's, yeah, I know. In America? In this country? I know.
What?
I will say that it's something that whenever we're listening to these words and we're looking at the actions around it and we're looking at who says it, it resounds very similarly to how it did historically. And so then whenever we think of women being able to work as well, whenever they started trying to apply to jobs to get in the market, they were often told, well, you don't have the experience to be able to do this. And so I don't know if anyone has ever, you know, been looking for a job where you've been told you have to have experience to get experience. But that is essentially what merit was. It was a way to keep people out, because they were like, well, you know, you may have done agriculture all those years of being enslaved, but now that you're free, that wasn't necessarily paid labor, so that doesn't count. And it was also allowing them to say what counts and what doesn't, because the decider of merit...
Right. It's such a hustle, Ashley.
It is.
It's a straight hustle. I'm gonna tell you need the experience to get the experience, but we're not going to give you the experience because you don't have these qualifications.
Always.
I mean, we could go round and round in a circle, right? For days. And so you keep using merit, but you are, there's no way you can get that experience without being putting in the seat. And no one's going to give you that chance to get put in the seat. So where do you end up? You're even before you get to the interview, you're disqualified.
Correct.
You're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
You're done.
Crazy. It's crazy, the idea of merit. And I'm sorry, please go on. I had to
No, I was glad. I'm glad that it's there, because it is essentially a way for people who have power in decision-making to reclaim that and be essentially the decider, because you now decide what merit is, and you now decide what's valuable, and you now decide what experience counts, because people clearly had experiences, but now we can discount them because we say, if you weren't this or you weren't that, then, you know, that's just the way it goes. So it's a very interesting concept. And I think the most interesting side of it is the other side of the coin. So we're all about merit until merit no longer benefits us, right? Things that I love hearing people say is we should move to merit because of things like sports. You look at sports, right? You can only, you have to go in the ranking of your actual performance. So if you're running at 20 seconds, if you're whatever it is, you are only as good as what you can perform. And so ideally, this is the perfect merit system anyone could ever see, right? LOL, because we look at things like the NFL, a group, an organization that created things like the Rooney Rule in recruitment. So for instance,
for our audience, please explain the Rooney Rule.
Yes. So
I know it because I live in sports.
Yes, excellent question. So the Rooney Rule is kind of this idea of more at-bats equals more hits. If you're talking about candidates, and let's say that your executives would love for a female to be able to fill this executive role that has high experience. So what you would ideally do is you would stack your candidate pool to reflect whatever community you are trying to dive into. And the idea is that if you do enough of those based off of your pass-through rate, you will then have enough of a qualified candidate pool that a female will have to have been selected, because more at-bats will equal more hits is the idea, right? So the more females you have, the more likely it is that you'll pull a female out of the pool. That makes perfect sense. When the NFL implemented the Rooney Rule, it was because they noticed that merit wasn't prolonging them past a certain point. There was a ceiling. There's a merit ceiling they couldn't break through. In fact, in like 2021, they had a report that 26% of NFL players were white, around 74, I think, were people of color. However, whenever you look at the coaches, management, and owners, just the head coaches alone, there are 29 head coaches, 26 are white. So that's at least over and around 90%. I understand also that the best players don't always make the best coaches. Trust me, I've worked enough with go-to-market and sales teams to know that some people should just carry the bag. However, whenever we're looking at the NFL and we're seeing how many qualified technically applicants they would have potentially to become a coach, I could get not hiring all of them, but hiring none of them, I mean, none of those performing at this high standard that are already captain or leader or capable to manage, none of them can be leaders. That's a pretty strong stance to have. They now introduced recruiting techniques, methodologies, social psychological things to be able to do this based off of data. So it's interesting knowing that we do know how to hire, recruit, and use strategy and bias for the right things only when we want.
And only when we're favoring the people in power.
Absolutely.
The people who are, you know, sitting at the top of the seat, who want it to look like them, who want it to stay like them, who want it to favor whatever they want it to go to. We are definitely doing that all over the board. And I just have to say to people on this call, like, if you're listening, please listen to me. If the NFL can do this and screw up, I seriously think this is a fundamental thing that big organizations struggle with. So as a person, and trying to figure out merit, how do you figure that out successfully? And I'm not talking about the NFL in any hatred, because I know they have a lot of, you know, programs now that go on and trying to do their best. But there are a lot of situations in sports where we should have been basing it on performance. We should have been basing it on merit. And they're not the only ones, right? And it was a real true example of how we just reverted back to the same old power system.
Yeah. So, and one example of this to just illustrate when we use merit and when we don't is sticking with NFL, thinking of someone like Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones owns the Dallas Cowboys, which is one of the biggest NFL income-driven organizations in the NFL. The man's never played football in the NFL at all. I think he played in college, but that was it. So if we're basing who gets to be the captain slash president of any one organization, and it's typically based on performance, but now we have people in seat who have never even played at the level, who are making the decisions on who should be coach and who should be. So it's something to where whenever we look at it, there are very convenient times that now all of a sudden merit either doesn't matter or the person who has been assessing on merit values whatever non-experience that person has and turns it into relevance.
And I think an important part of this is that I think people need to sit with these decisions for a second and actually dissect how you got where you were got to, right? Like dissect merit and at its purest form, look at your pipelines. And because I know we're talking about talent, I always want to rope that in. Look at your pipelines and look at what you were really searching for. And I've always said this, and you know this, I'll probably say it every episode. You guys hold the power to do better at this. Yes. You in HR and in talent have the almost full control of this system in ways that other departments do not. And so I encourage you to take a step back, dissect what your process looks like, your system looks like, your pipeline building looks like, your sourcing looks like, and take a step back and say, how am I doing this work? What am I really looking at as qualifications? And is it a level playing field? I'm going to say it a million times, I'll probably see every single episode.
I love it. It was a good one. And you know, and I think that it's important too, because in that kind of folds in into leading into how merit is even measured and assessed. So one thing that I keep mentioning is that the assessor gets to have almost complete control of their bias, right? They get to say, I'll count that experience or I won't count that experience. So it removes a lot of the structural neutrality that HR puts in place and really just shifts it all back to the manager in a biased form.
This episode is brought to you by DEI Labs, re-educating corporate America with immersive data-driven DEI training for HR and hiring pros. Ready to shift systems and spark real change? Visit DEI-labs.com to get started. Need a resume that actually works? Resume Writing is a female-owned team of recruiting pros helping job seekers land the roles they deserve. Get expert help at resumewriting.com.
How we measure merit and how it's done objectively and what that looks like is significantly, in my mind, where the fallacy of merit sits and why it on the surface is not just a remedy that you can slap on and will work.
The idea of merit being like this earned success idea, earned it so you get it, is just such a fallacy in my mind. It's usually, you know, backed by money or nepotism or a mentor or something else. Not saying that we don't have those, especially in my community. There's definitely more mentorship and community happening now than ever before. But, you know, I do think there's this fallacy that you just earn your success over time. Almost, if you look at data, and again, assessment and data, we're going to keep talking back to it. If you look at the data points in it, this is not true. It's just not true. And I always tell people my story. I came from a fairly wealthy family. And even for me as an African American, my dad's money fueled some of my success. I had a leg up already. Now I had a million other problems. Yeah. Right? Or not problems. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say problems. I had a million other things that were holding me back, but I definitely had my dad's money. I didn't have student loans, right? There was just a moment for me that, you know, my dad's success ended up helping me and get above the playing field, right? So to just think that that doesn't matter is insane to me. As someone who has benefited from it almost, it's insane.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I would say that, and merit kind of does exactly that in the skew of assessment. You were talking about having earned it. Merit doesn't measure what you've earned. It measures what you've had access to.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Can we get a clapping hands? Power block right there. That is like, that's the money shot right there, Ashley.
Yeah. Let's just say it again for the people here. Merit does not measure what you've earned. It measures what you have access to. And what I mean by that is whenever someone sees on a resume that someone went to Harvard, they value that at a 10. Wow, they went to Harvard. What you don't know about Harvard is it's a legacy-based school family that had gone there. And if they qualify, and all these different tidbits that really have a lot more to do with who you know versus how smart you are. And we know that based off of how people do admissions in college. We know that based off of findings that we've seen out of Stanford and how now those pools of who gets in can be highly, highly skewed. So we know that that access point isn't even a viable one if we wanted to use it as an assessment. Another one's logos. Where you work has way more to do with where you live versus how qualified you are. The odds of you living in Georgia and being the best software engineer on the planet is hard whenever the software engineering's in Silicon Valley on the other side of the country. So prior to 2020, before going remote, those things mattered significantly. Now we're 5 years in, so it can be a little different, but not different enough to change and not say that these things aren't access points. Another thing, we know what 60% of people who get jobs get them because of who they know. So now it's your network. So we have who went to school where in your family that you have no control over and who gets to go there. And then you have the logos, which you don't have control over because you live where you live. It's just over and over different things that...
It's crazy. And this just also goes to skill set though, right? You know, if you come from a low income community, how do you know how to network anything? Yep. Right? You know, your family.
And even if you did, like, even if you got Mayor Bob in, right? Right? Like, he's right. The biggest in your town. Meta doesn't care about Mayor Bob.
Right.
So even if you're doing the best that you can, you are limited to the devices, yes, of your community and your location. Not as much as before 2020.
No.
But it exists still.
Oh, absolutely. That's why whenever I see, and for people that have this on their profile, I'm sorry, but I hate to see the X Meta X.
I do too.
Because to me, that was a location almost determination of where you lived at that time, what was accessible to you. And right now, when they had all those laptops, because they chose to hire people around the country and then said, no, you need to come back to the office. So now we're going to exclude you from that. So when I see those big names on people's profiles on LinkedIn, I'm like, guys, that, I don't know why so much that's a badge of honor. It was in your area.
Right? It's because of merit.
Yes.
It's because it has this logo that has weight and people think, wow, you must be very, very smart to have done that. And we know that there's weight with these labels and logos because people who are not job seekers want other people to know on their LinkedIn headlines before they even click their profile that they are important. And what makes them important? Having worked at a label or a logo or whatever college, like, they want to associate with that because they know there's weight to it.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that you bring that up, because so often people are like, no, I can look past Harvard. I can look past. And it's like, no, you can't. We're all doing it automatically.
There's no way. It's an immediate. I even have it.
I do too.
I'm like, oh, you went to Harvard? Well, oh.
Yeah. You know, like, I want to talk about it. Right. Rory Gilmore? Like, tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know.
Well, and it's an immediate thing. It's societally, yeah, we have made those schools and those companies and those logos a really big deal. It costs more money.
Yeah.
They, you know, to go to school there, you know, you have to really work hard and go through 20 interviews to get Meta. Like, it's just that exclusivity of a club. We've made that important in our society. And so that fuels the merit idea. And then we should, and it's caused the complications we're sitting in now.
Yeah.
See it get reversed back to where we were before so quickly too.
So quickly. I think return to office and merit in combination, it's going to only get messier. Because
it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. When I saw all the return to offices, I could not believe how many there were that happened. Directly affects everything that we did for the past, well, some of us have been doing this work for a really long time, but if you take it from 2020,
yeah,
even in the last 5 years, you're completely reversing it with those couple decisions. And it's been heartbreaking for me, and I know for so many.
Yeah. I will say that it was interesting whenever it all transpired, because now you had people who could never have ever have seen Silicon Valley money making that in Houston, Texas, and other places. And it changed things so much. And rather than just a company owning up and saying, hey, we overhired, we're going to have to do this and giving severances, what they're doing is just the return to work, forcing them to have to let go of their own job so they don't get anything whenever it's done. And so to me, this was kind of a resetting method, in my opinion. It was the first time that that candidates really had the market to say what they wanted. Yes. It was the first time that people outside of California were getting California jobs and getting California salary. Yes. And it was working.
It was too. Working.
As I was talking about DEI kind of reconsolidating, I think we're at a point to where it was scaring them. Like, we were getting to a point to where...
Oh, absolutely. I think you saw my social posts on LinkedIn about, as you start to feel like it's getting equal, it starts to feel like oppression for you because this is a fear thing,
yes,
right? By the way, we're slowly inching up. And oh no, let's stop the presses because there's no way we're going to have that happen.
Yeah.
And it felt at that moment I wrote that post, it felt like everything I should be saying because this is what's happening.
Yeah.
Right? The fear they feel when we start to make progress is really very, very sad to watch.
Yeah. And to be clear on the fear, equality can feel like discrimination to an oppressor, is the synopsis here.
Yes.
That fear-driven approach that is driving all of this is because we were actually starting to do some damage here. And whenever we think back on our very first episode, how we talk about how we can change the wealth gap, how we can change people's generational wealth, how we can alter a whole family unit if we so want to use our powers in the right way. So whenever we think of the power that we have and this pinnacle height of what we were about to be, all of this to me makes sense because I've seen this whole thing as a game for a long time. And I know I don't know if that sounds good or bad.
I know. How dare you.
But to them, this is a game. Like, this is just, and I don't know that winning this game means success because it's not dismantling the system that's bringing us in. And so in a weird way, I think this is a moment in time whenever it comes to social and civil rights, we're about to see some stuff. Do we want to be successful in a system of disparagement? Success in that system doesn't mean we've dismantled it. And so that's what I want us to be careful about whenever we talk about merit and because I want us to teach some ways of solutions to get around this. What I want to emphasize, don't think that because we're about to go down and give solutions and talk a little bit more about the issue and all those things,
yeah,
that this means that we're giving in to this system of oppression. Our goal is still dismantlement, always. But I think that's important because I think we're at that point.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I believe we're definitely at that point where it's either going one way or the other. And I think there's many of us that have the ability to tip it the right way,
yeah,
if that makes sense. I would love to talk about solutions a little bit,
yeah,
because I think this is, we can talk about this stuff all day and me and you could probably sit here forever, by the way, and talk merit. So the other thing about this is merit does not address inevitable inequalities. And I know you're going to give some examples about this, but I'll just throw one out there, like maternity leave, right? So express a little bit more about those inequalities that are inevitable. They're going to happen.
Yeah, great question. So you mentioned maternity leave. One example that I use all of the time, disabilities is the one protected class that any one of us could join at any time. And we do not live in a world that is prepared for that. You could go home today, get in a car accident, lose your arm, and now how will you be a software engineer? And is your business set up to have employees that do have these real life incidences and just these victim of circumstance issues that have happened? How will we adhere to that? Because in DEI, we had efforts and committees going towards how do we create equality for women in the workplace? How do we ensure that just because a female gets pregnant, that she doesn't lose her career? Because how could then we ever assess based off of merit if every time that a woman decides to expand her family, she is now having to be pulled back 3 years in her career? You couldn't even assess it on paper accurately because it would be different from that of a male because she would have gaps that he would never, ever even be able to have because of the way that we're set up. Now, if you think about it, and it's going to sound weird, but sometimes the solutions to things like that, whenever we're talking about benefits, is more. Meaning, yes, you should have paid maternity leave. And if you want people to be assessed equally, you need to give paternity leave too.
Exactly. Because then now...
Yeah. Now we both have this type of gap. Now we both have this type of scenario as parents on our thing. And so it's equal. It won't be counted against us anymore once they are in the mix as well. And once we've neutralized what they've decided isn't meriting, right? That's essentially what I would say whenever we're looking at the third issue within merit. It does not address for the inevitables. It doesn't address for those with disabilities, veterans who need support services, maybe just came back from service and need some PTSD therapy and a counselor, things like that. But whenever it comes to accessibility, accommodations, adjustments, all of these different things were woven into DEI to be baked in and embedded into the structure of the business. Merit has no account for that. It has nothing that addresses any of these things.
I agree. And because I've always said that I'm trying to fix the broken system, right? And whatever I'm doing, DEI was trying to fix a broken system to me. Merit just keeps it on the steady. We're fine. We're good here. Like, kind of leave us alone. We have 2 weeks of, you know, maternity leave and, you know, a week of maternity leave. I don't know. But like, do you know what I mean? Like, we're already good. Our people don't need anymore. And DEI was coming in and saying, but you have all these different types of people that you're not addressing and all of these issues that you're not addressing. Mm. And I thought it was fixing the broken system to adapt to a million people. There's so many different types of people in the world, folks, with so many issues and concerns and needs. So I think that DEI was trying to address all of those. And I thought we were making progress. Merit says, nope, we're not going to do any of that.
Merit is the colorblind mentality. DEI is like, it takes all kinds of kinds. And we want to embrace that. We want to bring them in. And we want to value that. We want the diversity at the table because we want them to bring different concepts. It's the same thing of whenever we see a boom of innovation in like the 50s, 60s, whenever women start going into the workforce. Now, all of a sudden, they're seeing certain things that bring about mass solutions because they're like, oh, I know what could go on this. This is a weird example, but I think about the invention of overalls. It was a wife whose husband was working every day and his pants kept falling and he would get all dirty on his shirt and she was tired of washing it. So she figured out a way to hook his pants over back to his pants and to make it to where it could hold his tools and not dirty his shirt. And this was all just because her laundry. And so now we have coveralls, we have overalls, we have all these
overalls,
all these different things, all just because one woman was tired of her man's obnoxious laundry. And so whenever you think about things like that and you look at the world around you, like there's so much that was shaped because someone who was never involved with the process came along and said, oh, wait, why don't you just do this? And it flips everything. There is something to be said about whenever it comes to innovation, merit's not going to bring you that either.
It is
You're sitting
in the same space. Yeah. Now, what are we progressing to? I thought this was a society that wanted to move forward.
No.
And then why would we want to?
Not here.
We're just going to sit still.
Yeah.
And like just hold all the crazy stuff. All right, Ashley, I need to get into the solutions.
Let's get into it. So what I will say in explaining this, I do want to be very clear. I am not someone who likes to give people recipes without teaching them everything that's in the kitchen. I want to know that they're not going to break it, especially whenever we're dealing with people and human collateral. So as I explain this, this is going to be a very large synopsis. This is going to be a coverall, if you will, of the topic. And the reason for that is because the solution to this is actually a little bit intricate. And there are ways to explain it, but I do think it's something that if we're providing this information to people, I want us to be able to provide it in depth. So if you are interested in subscribing to our newsletter, if you're interested in following DEI Labs to actually get the toolkit on how to do this, please reach out to us. As far as surface knowledge on it, that's what we're going to dive in here. Our solution and what we call it is called Work Defined. So this is a type of an assessment that incorporates that merit-based mental approval along with adhering to those biases and different things things that we know are in the process and mitigating them. And essentially what Work Defined does is, for the most part, we assess talent as if they have an equal starting point, and then we judge them based off how far they've gotten, right? Like, you've gotten to Harvard, that's 10 steps. You've gotten to community college, that's only 2 steps. Like, there's a value to these things because we're assuming that we all started equally and we're measuring that endpoint, right? Work Defined does the opposite. So it says, okay, both of these people are qualified enough to be sent to the manager. Thus, they meet this endpoint, this solid thing. Now let's actually look backwards and see how much work that person did to get to this point, which I know as you hear this, you might be like, wait, isn't that the same thing? And the answer to this is no. And it's kind of weird. What it does is it measures for how far you've come. So if you already had legacy family in Harvard and you worked at Meta, and those are the only 2 things you've done, and you've slid in from third base to home, we're not going to count that as a home run. It only counts as moving 1 base.
So you're attaching value to some of your experiences and how you moved your trajectory of your career. Is that correct?
Correct. And essentially what we're doing is we're neutralizing the weight of those labels and logos. So what we do is we say, essentially, that person got a bachelor's and a job. Woohoo. Now we have candidate B, who went to community college, then senior college, worked their way through both schools and high school, had to, I don't know, do family care where they're also having to take their siblings back and forth and have all these different things that have contributed to grit, have contributed to a work ethic. If we look at that, that person has about 13, maybe 12 different items in their item line that got them to this point versus the other individual. And so whenever we've neutralized these weights and we actually look at it for what it is, the individuals who go to community college, who work themselves through school, who have symptoms on their resume of maybe lower income, lower SES, those are the people that, if they're able to be qualified equal to the person of someone who graduated from Harvard and went to Meta, that work line is very different. They had to claw to get in front of you if they don't live in Silicon Valley, if they didn't go to, you know, all those big things. So absolutely, we measure that. We measure not necessarily this neutral starting point and, you know, the bars of how far up you went, but really this neutral ending point and looking at the bars that it took to get you there, like the work that you put in.
Oh my gosh, I just want somebody to put the weight on the amount of work I've done to
get where I am. Right.
Right? You know, that is, I mean, it's just, it's invaluable. I can't imagine someone doing that, and how different that would change how we view candidates, how we view the world a little bit, because that weight of having to claw yourself out versus giving handed everything versus even the color of your skin. Oh, so many things, Ashley. We could go on forever and ever, but I do want to use this moment to stop Ashley a little bit. She gave you a good synopsis, but please subscribe to our newsletter. Also, please follow DEI Labs and contact them, because there's way more of that you should be interested in. So this the time of this show when we do stuff you didn't know before, folks. This is the time we dive into the psychological side of what we're talking about. And today we've been talking about merit. So we're going to talk about, how is merit possible if promotions are based on bias?
Woo! This is probably one of my favorite stuff you didn't know. Folks, it's one of the most interesting things that you will find. So science has been finding and data has been proving that there is bias in the promotion process. I think people hear that and say, wow, we needed science to prove that. But essentially what they've been finding is that based off of the gender of the employee is how they actually tend to evaluate their experience. So what we found in research is that women are often promoted based off of performance. Men are often promoted based off of potential. So whenever researchers are looking at the forms for their managers to fill out to get them the promotion, and you're looking at the logic for why this individual should be promoted, most of the language when it was for a female was, pretty much saying she's already doing the job, just doesn't have the title and doesn't have the pay. And we need to reconcile that because her performance has been performing on that. For gentlemen, on the other hand, it's actually rather interesting. The language in those notes are much more potential based. We believe that he has the knowledge. We believe that he has the skill. We've seen him do X, Y, Z. Thus, we are committed to ensuring that he could do another A, B, C, right? And so it's an interesting thing that we see in the language used in order to promote, because it gives us insight into how the companies are actually run in culture in the silence, meaning the things that we don't necessarily notice outright or see, which means that oftentimes, again, women, you might already be doing the work without the pay and without the title. So if you're looking for a promotion today, ladies, the best thing you can do, quantify your experience and show them your performance.
Oh my gosh, preach.
Yes, because that's preach. What they're basing it on anyway. So if you want it quicker, go tell them you're already doing it and show them the proof. It's going to be the best way to get you there.
Just on that note, I just want to say that if you listen to this whole episode and you just heard that stuff you didn't know before, I just want you to think about that and think about, where is the merit?
Correct.
In that.
And what's interesting is merit doesn't allow us to teach our hiring managers about that bias, even though we can see it in the notes.
Crazy, crazy talk, crazy talk. I want to thank you all for joining us today. This has been amazing. And we'll see you next time.
I'm Desiree.
And I'm Ashley. And thanks for listening to Talentless, where we keep it real in the world of HR.
If you loved what you heard, don't forget to hit subscribe and give us a follow on Blue Sky, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We're here to keep your feed packed with everything you need to level up in recruitment and HR.
And be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And hey, don't miss out. Sign up for our newsletter for fresh insights and follow us on socials to stay connected with both Ashley and me.
Thanks again for joining us on Talentless. Until next time, we'll see you then.